House Committee on Revenue for May 20th, 2009 will come to order. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2533. Colleagues, yesterday we discussed this bill. We have the dash four amendments, which I'll ask Steve to explain again, and then it's my hope that we will move them and send the bill to the floor, rescinding the Ways and Means referral. Steve, you want to tell us again what that one does, and also, did we finally get the paperwork we need?
Mr. Chair, we did get the paperwork. We have a dash four amendment minimal expenditure impact from fiscal, so all the paperwork is available. The bill would allow a school district with a small high school to qualify for additional student weights in a school formula if the high school has not changed locations since 1995 and is small on July 1st, 1909, rather than 1995. But that's the language that allows the four small high schools to qualify for the additional small high school weight. And then it also has the language in that allows the Portland School District to continue its levy and to exclude 50 cents of that tax rate levy from local revenue in the school formula.
All right.
And that is a permanent change.
Representative Berger? I'm sorry, Representative Gelser?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments to House Bill 2533.
Representative Gelser moves the dash four amendments. Discussion? Is there any objection to the dash fours? Dash fours are adopted. Representative Gelser?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2533 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
And the rescission of the Ways and Means referral?
Subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded as per letter from the Speaker.
Thank you. thank you. Representative Gelser moves House Bill 2533 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And rescission of the referral to Ways and Means, which we'll ask the Speaker for. All right, is there any further discussion? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an important bill and one that I'll be supporting today, and I do think it's important that it pass on the floor. But with your indulgence, I would like to make a couple of comments. It is important that we allow for the health of our rural schools and that we modify the way that we fund our rural schools such that those schools that are in flux are able to access appropriate funding. It is also important that we reauthorize the gap bond financing for the metro area. But the larger point is that we as a state need to maintain our commitment to education and to our schools. And as I look across the funding in this package, we need to make sure that we have more resources going to education and that we are appropriately funding all of our schools and that we have an option for schools across this state to be able to look at local revenue options. Now, there are a lot of schools struggling across the state. In my district in particular, we have a high school, Benson High School, that was at one time a national model for vocational education. And because of cuts to education, those programs have been scaled back significantly. We don't only need to look at the health of our rural schools, we also need to make sure all of our schools are healthy. And when a bill is a reduction in funding for any school, it is an issue for those students. So I will be supporting this bill today because we do need to reauthorize the gap bond, because we do need to change the formula for rural school assistance. But it is with reluctance that I face a situation in which we do not have adequate resources for any of our schools in the state of Oregon.
Yes, Representative Sprinkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be enthusiastically supporting this bill. That said, the original conversation came to us in a couple, three pieces, and one of those pieces, as we know, were elementary schools, and the same arguments that have been used to support this particular bill for high schools are the very same arguments and points that support the elementary schools, and certainly as I discussed in my testimony, and further on the particular school I was talking about, has since lost that part-time media assistant and is most likely closing its library. A school without a library is just a foreign concept. So, as I said, I'll be supporting this bill, and this is a session that causes us to make lots of tough choices.
Yeah.
That said, yeah, we're choosing one school over another school in the current format, and certainly I would agree with Representative Bailey that we need to look at that, and sacrificing some for others is not okay, because there should be no winners and losers when it comes to education. They should all be winners.
Representative Call.
I just briefly, Mr. Chair, and sorry I'm late, I just wanted to put on the record again that I support rural and small school districts and understand their importance, but my school district's in a very specific situation, and because of that, I can't do anything that would... I don't feel I can cast a vote against them in any way, shape, or form. Reynolds is one of the largest school districts in the state, and it will have no libraries. I know that that's a result of mismanagement on the part of the school district at a very local level, but at this point, I'm desperately trying to get as much funds to them as I can and need to work to try to maintain the funding that they have. And because of that, and among other things that school district is contemplating cutting, I can't support any bill that would take any funds from them. So I'm a no on this, though understand how important it is and hope that it passes on the floor.
Thank you. Others? Please call the roll. The vote is on sending this bill to the floor with a due pass and rescission of the Ways and Means referral.
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative
Berger.
Aye.
Representative
Byrne.
Aye.
Representative Gelser.
Aye.
Representative Call.
No.
Representative Green.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
Aye.
Representative
Springer.
Aye.
Chair Barnhart. Aye. The motion, having received the required majority, is passed, and the bill will go to the floor, the Speaker willing. Representative Gelser, will you carry? And that others who are interested specifically in the gap bond may want to second her on the floor. With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2533. I'm sorry, the work session on 2533.
I'm sorry?
We closed the work session on 2533.
Yes.
And we'll open the work session on House Bill 3305. And I understand we have some information we can discuss today.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The House Bill 3305 comes back to life again.
I was told this morning that the proponents have one amendment and or want to discuss a different one, and so we have an opportunity today to let them do that.
Do you
have other information?
No, Mr. Chair, I just saw the amendment that will be passed to you with the rest of the, I think they have a letter and a whole different set of suggestions about the different segments of the bill.
Okay.
And those, you know, just to refresh your memory about the bill, it's a bill that has to try to readjust certain things that we've done about the estate tax in last session or the February session, and that's what we discussed last time, and here it is back with this suggestion in front of you.
All right. Please.
Mr. Chair, Jeff Stone, Oregon Association of Nurseries. I'm not the technical expert. I have the two gentlemen on either side of me are. But just to help you frame this morning's conversation, after our public hearing before your committee, we asked for a work group to come together and talk about the salient issues that reside with this bill and this effort. We did so on May 7th to meet and talk about all the salient issues that all the 5 points that you'll see in our memo to you that we think that will make the law work on the ground. The good news is that the Dash 1 amendments that you have before you largely work. There is one area of further conversation regarding the definition of working capital. And I'll allow these two to not have to undo any of my words about working capital. But suffice it to say that we worked with practitioners, various CPAs, and we're very blessed to have Clint Bentz here, who is our resident expert. But we had a lot of CPAs look at how do you actually make the working capital definition work in a way that meets to what the chair wanted and what the committee wanted to make sure that it's reflective of a business operation that exists here in Oregon. Now, currently, working capital is on a 12-month cycle through definition. We submit that other entities like forestry and nurseries, even fishery operations, may have a longer cycle from cash to cash. So I'll be quiet there, but we have a detailed memo for the record, Mr. Chair, from Sean Cleave and myself. You have some other documents, including the Dash 1, and a comparison by Mr. Sheen about the various changes that we seek in this bill. So I thank you for your time, and I'll leave it to my two smarter friends to talk.
Yeah. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Jeffrey Sheen. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Samuel Joel and Cantor in Portland, Oregon, and I think probably the most appropriate place to start is with working capital, which Mr. Bentz is going to cover here shortly. But as a precursor to that whole discussion, one avenue, Chair Barnhart, that we looked at was when, at the work group session, the thought was to kind of break down what kind of cash conversion cycle would be appropriate for a vineyard versus an apple orchard or things of that nature. And so one of the things that I spent some time with was to look at the sort of the national industrial classification system as a way perhaps to create an avenue to structure what the cash conversion cycle would be for various types of crops. And just in the agricultural group alone, there's over 100 categories of different types of crops and businesses, and the list that explains the descriptions of what all of these classifications mean, I downloaded a PDF file and it was over 500 pages long. So we have abandoned that as a project. So, and with that, I will turn the floor to Mr. Bentz because I think we have a simpler solution.
I don't feel quite so badly about still being in the middle of it after hearing that.
And I read all 500 pages, Mr. Chair.
Of course.
So, Chair Barnhart, I'm Clint Bentz, and I'm a CPA and partner with the firm Bolt Carlisle Smith in Staten, Oregon, and I've been involved with this bill since its inception. We did look at the challenge of both the taxpayer and the practitioners trying to figure out how to compute the number, and then also for the Department of Revenue to figure out how to track it and audit it and make sure that it worked. And we hit a brainstorm and decided just to make this very, very simple, and that is to cap the amount, to just basically put a dollar amount equal to a percentage of the total assets that qualify under this section. So we're proposing that for working capital, which is defined as capital, cash investments set aside to fund the ongoing operations of a farm, natural resource business, or commercial fishing business. So We're just going to say it's funds set aside to fund the ongoing operations, and that will limit the amount of money that can be elected under this section to 20% of the assets that qualify, otherwise qualify as natural resource property. So we've got a cap. It can't be more than this. The executor can determine how much. Those funds need to be segregated. They need to be set aside in an account. They need to be identified. And over the course of the rollout, the 5 of 8 years afterwards, if money is taken out in excess of what the business earns for federal income tax purposes, then that's considered a disposition. So as long as they leave the money in the business, they can take out what they make, but that original amount of working capital, as long as that stays in the business for the 8 years, it's not a disposition. So I think it's very simple. It's easy. It's simple to compute. It's easy for the department to figure out. We said it's 20% of the assets, not including working capital, so we don't get a gross-up. So it's 20% of the assets, not including the working capital amount, and we just put that dollar amount in there. It does not increase the $7.5 million. This is part of the natural resource property. So it's considered natural resource property, but it's limited to 20% of the other. So we basically just added a section in the things that qualify as natural resource property to include that in there. So I think it's very, very simple to compute. It's simple to it's capped, so we know how much it is up front. There's a limit, and for some businesses, 20% may be more than they need. For other businesses, it's not going to be enough. But it's enough money, I think, for those good operators that have set aside cash, that we can protect that cash to continue to operate the business. So I think that solves the issues that we were trying to determine. So we've put in a section there that basically says that, again, it's segregated, it's limited, and that if you take out more than what you make during that period, as determined for income tax purposes, then that's a disposition. And if you commingle it, or if you cease to identify it as working capital, you commingle it, then it also is a recapture event. We had a second thing, because we were also talking about material property recovery accounts. And this is the idea, again, for people that have also set aside money to replace equipment, to do major repairs, to do replacement equipment, and maybe even to purchase a new combine or something like that. And we'd like to have a similar scheme where basically, again, up to 20% of the amount of natural resource property, not including those funds. Again, they're segregated, they're identified up front, and if those dollars are removed for anything other than purchase, repair, or replacement of natural resource property, then that's a disposition. So even the earnings on those funds, if they're removed for anything but that would be considered a disposition for the rollout period. So again, I think it's easy to administer, it's easy to compute, and I don't believe that it increases the cost of this bill. In fact, I think it caps it, because right now we have this definition of working capital that says 12 months, and how we can, you know, the challenges of just even figuring that out, both on the taxpayer side and the department side, I think is going to be more expensive than what we have in this bill.
Thank you. Questions? Comments? Yes, Mr. Sheen.
Chair Barnhart, I think one of the other things, too, about this proposal is it's inconsistent with good accounting practices of the businesses that are involved, that they're setting aside these working capital accounts. I mean, we've heard some testimony in a previous hearing about this. And I think part of this reason for the provisions being in here to have segregated accounts is to make it easier to track from everybody's perspective, and it's also consistent, I think, with good business practice within those industries, and so that seemed to is why it's incorporated as part of this amendment.
Sure.
So if this is the 20% out of the $7.5 million comes to about $1.5 million, right?
Would be the maximum.
So the total.
Well,
no,
it wouldn't be that much, because it would be that this 20% has to be inside the seven.
Inside. So the natural resource property without the 20% capital would have to be a maximum of $6 million, right?
Probably, yeah, be something, yeah, six.
Oh, the ceiling,
yes,
applies to both.
So if you had $6 million of otherwise natural resource property that you could add basically 20% to get up to the $7.5 million cap of cash and investments. But they had to be segregated, set aside for the business, and if you pulled them out for anything but use of the business, then it's a recapture event.
And then,
Just to add on to that, it looks like you've got two 20%s in here.
Correct.
So if you had a material property recovery account that was full, as it were, and you had a working capital account that was full, one presumes then that the maximum amount that the farm otherwise could be worth and still fit within the $7.5 million be around six.
It would be 60% of $7.5 million, whatever that number is.
Not quite 60%. It would be 5/7.
Okay. Yes.
You got to know what your denominator
is,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. So the arithmetic is a little bit challenging, but I'm sure we can figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make sure we understand that this all has to fit within the limits.
It all has to fit within the limits.
Now, how does this apply then? I'm sorry, other people may have questions, and I should take those first. How does this apply then to a farm that, let's make it simple, has an annual crop and goes to the bank to borrow money in the spring to plant, and in the fall when it harvests, it receives the proceeds, pays off the bank, and takes the rest home? How does this apply to them?
Well, and they passed away at that moment when the bank, they got the money in the bank.
They got their loan.
So the loan is paid off, the money's in the bank, and then they passed away.
Right.
So at that point, then, we would determine what's the value of the land, if they've got any crop in the ground, their machinery, their equipment, the house, all that. That would be the property. Then we'd say then up to 20% of that number of the cash would also qualify as natural resource property, and up to 20% of that amount in cash. Again, if they wanted to segregate it, and this would be a decision that the executor would need to make, that I want to segregate these funds, set them aside, and the family agrees to not touch them for the five-year period, except for these purposes, then those funds could also be set aside and qualify for exclusion under the credit.
Okay, so this would not be funds that would be segregated by the decedent. These would be funds that would be segregated by the executor.
By the executor would be my, yes.
Okay. Well, that's a little different than what I thought we were dealing with, because from Mr. Sheen's comment, I thought was right on, in that if you're going to run a farming business and you actually have working capital and funds to replace depreciated assets, that you ought to be maintaining accounts as part of the business enterprise while you're still alive.
Right.
Mr. Chair, Jeff Stone, for the record, there's an example just up the road, Brentano's Tree Farm in Salem, that Pete Brentano's dad passed away, and they had to, this is a lot of reason that this bill's before you today, because they had to sell off part of their land. The thing that he does as a business practice is that he puts in separate funds for a new tractor, for operating funds, because you never know in this business whether or not you're going to hit a rough patch. And his cycle, for example, is about a 7-year cycle.
Right.
From the time you put a tree into the ground before you can even send it to market to another wholesaler. So I think the point that you make is a valid one, and I think there are a lot of businesses, and maybe that's what Mr. Sheen was getting to.
Well, he already has a material property recovery account.
He
doesn't call it that.
Yes. He does, but his brother down the road may not be as intuitive on the needs that he may that present himself to the business. And so it's those folks that we want to try to, who have something cataclysmic come to their family, and you have that opportunity to segregate those dollars like Mr. Benz has talked about.
But we're also saying that these funds in fact will need to be segregated by the executor, because we're going to have a cap in the amount that can be set aside. That's going to need to be identifiable going forward. And so there's going to be a specific election that's made on specific accounts, specific funds that will be set aside in the estate process for moving forward. Those funds are going to have to exist at the date of death, or there's nothing to segregate. So That's what we're
right.
what we're saying.
If the date of death is during in the middle of the crop cycle when there's no cash,
there may not be any cash.
Then the executor's job is going to be to harvest the crop and sell it.
Mm-hmm.
But the farm's value at the date of death will include the crop.
That's correct.
And therefore, you don't. It's not an issue.
It's not an issue.
Yeah.
I would also, Mr. Chair, just remind the committee that this is an elective tax credit, much like that you have. Sideboards on what's applicable in terms of your total estate value and how much. I mean, that's a source of irritation between Mr. Bentz and I on that issue. But the fact of the matter is you have sideboards now on what's applicable to the natural resource credit.
Great. Are there further questions about this proposal? Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not on the working capital
please.
Question.
Excellent.
And I'd like to say that I think that is a pretty elegant solution. Makes things a lot more clear than what they were before. So my question is, and this is something I raised in the work group, was I guess what you have down is issue 5. And we talked about in there, I raised the concern that if we... And just to give the background on this, you know, to really simplify it so that everybody understands what my question is, right? You, federal tax is due, so you sell off some of your land, pay that tax. When you sell off that land, then you have an Oregon tax that comes due, so you might have to sell off more of your land to pay the Oregon tax. Mm-hmm. And so what I want to make sure that we're not doing here is creating a situation in which the first thing that you go to sell off is your farmland because it's given a favorable tax status over anything else that you might go to sell off. That concern wasn't really addressed in the work group. I didn't really get an answer that I felt was really satisfying on that. And I think we're all in this for the same objective, which is to preserve the farmland. And you guys see a concern there around that I agree is there. But I think that we might be creating a different concern if we move forward with this as the solution. And wondering if you can just assuage my fears on that.
Chair Barnhart and Representative Call. I think the opportunity there to take advantage of a so-called tax savings in some respects is pretty minimal because whatever savings you create to save state taxes, 45% of that savings goes to the federal government. So you're already kind of losing ground. And I don't think, as I understand, I mean, most people who have accumulated land to run a farming operation or forest land operation or vineyard, they need that property to continue to run and work in their business. And whatever equipment they've accumulated, they typically need that equipment to run their business operation. So from a purely kind of economic perspective, it would not be a wise decision for them to sell off more property just to save a little bit of Oregon tax, particularly when they're going to have to give some of that to the federal government. So I think in some ways, economically, the concern you raise is somewhat self-policing. It would not be a good business decision for most people to do that. So
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
So the situation arises where, and I understand that there are caps here, and we're not talking about, the largest farms or vineyards on the planet here. So I do get that there is some self-regulation on this and that the sideboards are there. But I also do, I think... It wouldn't be so far-fetched to say that, a person who owns a farm might also, in this day and age, own a bit of stock, may own some other capital that might be bequeathed to a family member. And so my concern is, as a first-order question, when the federal tax comes due and you have some stocks or bonds that may not be a lot of money but may be enough to pay off that tax liability, that you look as a person looking at this situation, you go, I can sell off some of my land and thereby, pay off my federal tax burden, but not and not have any tax owed at the state level, or I could sell off some of this stock and owe at the federal and the state level. And I know we're not talking about a lot of money, but there does seem to me to be a legitimate concern there that the person might actually decide to sell off the land because the tax burden is lessened. Are you saying that the numbers are so small on this that the amount of money that would be saved is not consequential enough that this situation wouldn't arise?
Representative Call, I see it as a fairly small number, and it may be. I haven't run the actual calculations, but given the economic consequences of selling off something that you need for production, creates an even greater cost, if you will, in the loss of a business operation. That it seems like it, you know, that's why I said economically, I think it's kind of a self-policing program, because you're going to give up an extra piece of the business assets that you need to produce what it is that you grow, that it would be a pretty unwise economic decision to do that just to save a little bit more in Oregon tax.
Chip in on this as well, Chair Barnhart and Representative Call. The real issue that we're facing now with family farms is that typically family farmers don't own very much of their land right now. A typical farmer might own 300-400 acres of their own, and they're leasing another 3,000-4,000 acres from other people. And the real challenge we're facing in the farm community is that as people die, will those lands be converted to other uses and not be available for farming anymore? And so the real challenge for these family farmers as they pass away is to keep this land in agriculture, not to sell it and have it go someplace else. And we are requiring that a member of the family continue to operate this farming operation for 5 years after. So if you're going to peel off some of the golden goose to save maybe $100,000 in tax, that makes no sense economically for the family to do that.
Great, thank you. That answers my question.
That's helpful. Other questions, comments? We're obviously not ready to work the bill today because the amendments haven't been drafted, but this would be a great time if others have comments or thoughts to bring them up. It looks to me like it's time for another work group meeting and to see if we can refine this thing to the point where we can go for an amendment. I expect we can schedule one. Yes.
Mr. Chair, Jeff Stone, if you as a chair in the committee see fit that the concepts outlined in this memo are of a nature that you'd like to see put in amendment form, we can certainly make that happen for you. Mm-hmm. And that way we could also finally figure out what if there's any fiscal impact over and above what you passed in 2008, then that would be known. My point is that I think that we have tried with all the CPAs and practitioners that we know, and it's taken us, unfortunately you don't have language because we just were able to get consensus last night on this matter. So if with your permission, we can get Legislative Council or ask Legislative Council to draft these in amendment form and then work with Mazin and the rest of the committee about what the fiscal impact may be.
Well, I think it's perfectly fine to go ahead and do that, but I also believe that it would be useful to get the work together one more time to see if we can further refine some of these concepts. Right here they're fairly skeletal and mm-hmm. there are still a lot of details to be discussed. I'm thinking about definitions primarily. Yeah. Is there anything else then for this group? Yes, sir.
Chair Barnhart, if you're thinking along the lines of definitional issues, mm-hmm. and we're headed towards a work group session, either in this proceeding or outside of it, if you want to share what those definitional issues are, then you know the work group can we can. Put some effort into developing those before the work group happens.
Right.
So
I think that's great.
However you want to share that, that would be much appreciated.
I think that's a great idea. Good. Thank you. Anything else now? Colleagues, a short meeting today, but we will have, I think, some fireworks tomorrow. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3305, we're adjourned.
Didn't we already pass the fireworks?
Like fireworks. The fireworks bill, yes.